Welcome back to the podcast. Well, if you haven't joined us before, welcome. A very warm welcome. Grab a cup and enjoy. So today I'm speaking to Deborah Henley, and she's got a fantastic vision to bring life and soul back into organisations so that people can bring their best to work and thrive. Deborah draws on a unique foundation in the film industry, psychotherapy, the creative arts, business and marketing, along with qualifications in neurolinguistics, clinical hypnotherapy, mastery in executive coaching and art psychotherapy to create bespoke experiences and workshops for you that will have an immediate and lasting impact on your people. And that's what she does. She's got 15 years experience in personal and professional development and training with blue chip organizations. And today she's going to be talking to us about her new book. I ask her what's her background, how does she get to where she is now? What's the new landscape of leadership? I ask her what's her biggest aha moment she's had. And she's brilliant quote, which I love. And there's some special questions I ask at the end as well. So let's start the podcast now. Deborah Henley, welcome to the podcast. Good to see you.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is all about leadership. But before we go into where you are now, what's your background? What have you done? I mean, there was a brief, obviously, I'll talk to a brief intro before we started, and people would have heard that. But what brought you to where you are now?
Well, I've spent 20 years kind of broadly in the field of psychology and social sciences, but it's been a very meandering path from starting out in the film industry as a clapper loader, taking the clip at the beginning, 27, take three, clap, and loading the films. And from working on those film sets, I realised just how fascinated I was in people and the story behind people and how the whole film pulls together to create an experience that members of an audience can sit in an auditorium and just be moved by. And I think that just sort of sowed a seed in me. But then I moved into psychology, and I trained as a clinical hypnotherapist. And again, thought, this is great. I can help people make films in their minds. Only now these films can change them and empower them and enable them to, exploit more of their own potential or live a better life. And from that, I work with people in addiction recovery, using metaphors and symbols of the subconscious and a lot of sort of change techniques to help people make a real transformation around who they were. But effectively, it wasn't a transformation from being somebody they were into somebody they weren't. They were actually rediscovering themselves through that transformation, rediscovering who they could be and who they had the potential to be. But then I took a huge shift and went to work in the corporate world and financial services. And so in my mid-30s, I had my first role in the city. It was my first full-time role because I'd always been a freelancer. And I worked at EY, one of the big four. I ended up heading up all the client relationship development activities and events. So that was to help the partners of the firm develop effective business relationships with people. And so I brought my psychological experiences into a very different field. But I realized that even there, the people that had the most traction, the people who developed relationships and won the most business, were people who were able to be authentic and vulnerable, who kind of knew themselves and who were kind of had some charisma and inspiration about them, who were able to think for themselves and perhaps sort of have a narrative that was attractive to other people. In a way, they had a powerful personal brand.
Yeah, you talked just briefly, you talk about being vulnerable, and this is sort of an element of courage, brave to be able to do that. And Brené Brown talks about being vulnerable, and she's done a whole study on that. What do you actually mean by that? If someone's listening to this now, what do you mean by being vulnerable? Does that mean sort of curling up in a ball and crying? Is that with the vulnerability? What do you mean by that in terms of a leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not curling up and being weak, and nor is it sort of hanging out all your dirty laundry. What it is it's not putting that barrier up between yourself and other people that is kind of often artificial, like a mask. But instead of having that barrier, it's just being prepared to be open about your own opinions, your own perspectives, your own unique and maybe quirky way of seeing the world. And that takes courage, but it's also vulnerable because you're opening yourself up to sort of personal attack. There's a saying which I really love, and I don't know who said it first, but it's better to be hated for who you are than loved for who you are not. And I mean, it really gets you thinking. Nobody wants to be hated, of course. We all want to be loved. But we've got to take that risk, because if we're loved for who we are not, we're still not loved.
Yeah, I love that. I've just written it down, actually. I muted my microphone and muted it. Yeah, it's better to be hated for who you are than loved for who you are not. I think it's true, and certainly in the world of social media, you know, it's a lot of people call Facebook fake book, because it is like, look, I'm having a fantastic time. And it is just unreal. And I used to do that as well. I mean, I've been in my business now for 12 years. And I remember at the beginning, I was all pinstripe suit, and the fake it till you make it was definitely my sort of mantra. It just didn't work. It doesn't wash after a while. It's just being the real you. And we've talked before about being authentic. It's a word that's bandied around, but it is true. And I think it's one of the things I'm going to be moaning for a bit now, but I see people sort of complaining on social media about, oh, this has happened, that's happened. I think, well, that's just increasing the negativity. What I love to see is someone saying, I had a really bad situation, but this is where I am now. This is what I've learned from it. And I think that shows, you'd be vulnerable to put that out there, but also show that what you've learned from it, the positive you've got from it. So I see that as a really lovely leadership quality. What do you think on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my book, Your Leadership Story, which is about helping leaders to form their narrative and find a way of sharing their story in a way that influences and inspires people. And in that, I sort of say there are three types of personal stories that people tell, but only one of them really belongs on a stage or kind of in a professional capacity. And that's, so the first one that doesn't belong is the open wound story, which is where people are still perhaps too vulnerable, too open. Their wound is open and they're bleeding all over the stage, you know, and that kind of story really belongs in therapy, because they haven't healed it and they haven't found the positive insight or the message that's of value to other people. They haven't healed, so they're not really ready to use that as a leadership story. It still needs its own time and space to recover. So in terms of being vulnerable, that doesn't belong there yet. You know, that belongs with friends or in therapy or in a safe environment. And then the second type is the opposite, and I call it the scratch record story. And this is the story that someone's told, and it's kind of often very gung-ho. Aren't I brilliant? You know, I've done this amazing thing. Or it could even be a story of pain. I used to, in addiction circles, I used to hear people often go, yeah, when I was drinking a lot, I'd drink 3 bottles of vodka before breakfast, and then I'd do this crazy wild thing. And there would almost be a sense of sort of boastfulness about it. And again, that's not vulnerable. It's a story that it's a scratch record story, because it's been told so many times, it's lost any resonance and again vulnerability. It's not connected to that person's heart.
Do you think I know what the answer will be, but do you think a lot of people define themselves by a particular episode that's happened in the past, particular thing that's gone on? Like, you know, I was an abused person, this is why I'm like this now. My parents split up when I was younger, this is why I'm, and they almost, that defines them.
Yeah, I think if it's a broken, I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's no getting away from some of these significant things that have happened in people's lives. But I think when it becomes a story that gets trotted out and the person hasn't found, and this is the third type of story that needs to be told, the person needs to find in that tale the lesson, you know, the uplifting lesson, the positive insight from it all. So whether you've got an open wound, the open wound doesn't heal until you've really found how it's been a gift. And the same with the scratch record story that you're trotting out, you know, I had this terrible childhood and I was treated really blah blah blah, you know, it's not that I don't have compassion for that, but you can get two people who have exactly the same experience or maybe grew up in the same household with the same, you know, I don't know, abusive situation, for example, and one will come out with such generosity from it, with such generosity that they can really transform other people's lives. And
how do you think people get there? Because this is, it reminds me, this is a guy I'm working with over in Colorado. He's quadriplegic. He was hit by a car on his bike, push bike, about 8 years ago. So he's now, you know, he's massive nerve damage in the back. And now he's helping people to also recover from accidents, post-surgery and things like that. And he's it's incredible. And he sees it as a gift now.
Wow.
Amazing, the strength of that. But what do you think, as you said, you got two people in the same household, both experience the same thing, but one, you know, person A sees it one way, person B sees it another one. Is that, a genetic makeup? Is it what they're absorbing, what they're reading, their peer influence? What do you think it is? What's changing them?
I think I'm just going to take the easy answer to this because I don't really know. And I was going to say, I think it's a combination of all those things. But I think for some people, you can get locked into the story or the narrative that this is entirely bad and there's nothing redemptive in it. And people can get locked in that for years and years. And actually, you know, when I work with my addiction clients, that was often the situation where for years and years, people would have been able to see nothing other than the misery of the situation. So I think sometimes it's just having the opportunity for somebody to present it to them in a different way, or to help them, just to ask some gentle and compassionate questions that sort of challenge and encourage them to see it a different way. I mean, for somebody like the person that you're working with in Colorado, I think that's just incredible, because there is a certain amount of time people need anyway to wallow. And I think, you know, what you don't want to do is, you know, someone gets knocked over by a bike and becomes quadriplegic and you go, oh, well, I'm sure there's a gift in there somewhere. You know,
that'd be quite heartless. Yeah. I love the line where it's fine to have a pity party, but I just don't want to be clearing up after you.
Well, there's a great, one of my clients said to me once, he was somebody I worked with for a long time in addiction recovery, and I bumped into him at a party a few years later, and he had continued in his recovery and he was looking really healthy and well. And he pointed me out and he said, "There's the woman who taught me how to smile again." And it was so touching.
Oh, that's lovely. That's beautiful. Yeah.
But the thing he said to me was, "Do you know what God stands for?" And I said, "No." And he said, "It stands for the gift of despair." Wow. And I thought that was amazing. That. You know, yeah. But it takes a while. I think it just takes a while to say, how can this most devastating thing be the most, be actually the thing I've been waiting for all my life to help me and enable me to see things better? I mean, nobody wishes devastating experiences on anybody at all. And I think the people who have been able to find the light in the darkness are some of the most incredible people I know. You know, and I'm sure you know people like that as well.
Absolutely.
And people that haven't had, in a way, an opportunity to find the light in the darkness, maybe their life has been blessed with a dim light for most of it. Sometimes they don't ever really get the chance until, you know, suddenly something hits them later on in life, and they don't, difficult thing happens, someone dies on them, or they get divorced, or they're made redundant, or something happens in their life, and it might be the first time they've really had to deal with something quite major, and it can really knock them off balance, and they're not so equipped as the person who's perhaps been dealing with sort of various challenges and going, okay, I can come out of this, I can grow, I can learn, I can evolve, although that gets tiring as well, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think so much it is to do with our mind talk. And I met someone the other day and they said, oh, just, you know, life is just, it's, you know, it's hard and whatever else they said. And it was, it's like, well, it kind of will be if you view life in that way. It's like I remember someone saying once, if you walk down the road and you make a mental note to pick up everything that's green, you'll see everything's green. Yeah. If you then walk back down the same road and pick up everything that's blue, you'll notice everything's blue. And it's the same with the mindset. If you see everything through a cloud that, oh, it's terrible, it's hard life, then that's what you'll pick up on, and you'll reinforce those. Anyway, you're the expert in this. But Deborah, what is sort of the new landscape of leadership, do you think? Certainly after having the whole pandemic, which we're still going through now. But what is the new landscape?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, that obviously the pandemic has accelerated the fact that people are engaging with one another in virtual spaces far more. And this means that people are much more dislocated, and there's less of that sort of human connection and belonging, which I think people are yearning for. And also what you said earlier about this sort of fake world where people are putting, you know, everybody's got a managed profile online on Facebook or wherever else, on Instagram. And we hire people, we fire people, we find out about people by doing quick online searches. Dating is done that way, you know, and so everybody's putting forward these personae. And so I think in terms of leadership, it's so important that we bring back that human element, both in terms of overcoming the dislocation from all being in our own separate virtual spaces, and also just to break through those barriers that have been put up through all the profiles and images and, you know, managed, curated sense of selves and that we put out there. You know, how can we start to really engage human to human, person to person, in a really genuine way, so people feel that warmth and they can trust the person who is leading them to genuinely care. I think there's two sides to leadership. There's both, you know, there's the looking forward, which is where can we take our team? How can we succeed? How can we achieve our mission? And then there's also the kind of looking back or around to say, how can I ensure everybody is on board and taken care of, and we can all get there together as a team? So it's not just leaping ahead and going after the mission, but you do need a leader who is aspirational and you can be certain can get you there. But that leader also needs to know and understand how to motivate and mobilize and create meaning for a variety of different personality types and human beings. I call it the three M's, you know, create meaning, motivation and morale. But meaning is a tricky one. Yeah.
What do you think then has been your biggest aha moment, you think, working with your clients? Is there something that's really sort of stood out for you that's gone, wow, that's, yeah, or something that you've found out about and just there's been a way to resolve it, whatever? What's been your biggest aha?
Something's not coming to mind immediately, but I think it's the recognition that people do genuinely care. And I think all of us want our life to have some form of significance, whether we're doing that through leadership or in any other way. But if we're talking about leaders, we want to leave our own legacy. We want to be the only person who do it quite that way. You know, if anyone else were in our role, they'd do it slightly differently. And I think it's finding out what is the way that we can bring our best to whatever situation we're in and make our own unique difference.
I love that. I mean, you've brought so much of yourself. I mean, you have such an incredible background, the talents that you bring to your clients. You know, you've done so much, as you were saying before, you know, clinical hypnotherapist. You did art psychotherapy as well, and NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. But you're you know, going to be a journalist. Where were you being a journalist? And you got held up at gunpoint. All the amazing things you've done in your past, which we'll put on the show notes. But you're bringing all of that to your clients. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I've dotted around. As I said, you know, it was a very meandering path to get to where I am now, and hopefully there's a lot more to come in my future. It ain't over yet by any stretch, but I think for a long time I just thought, where is all this going? You know, I really want to make my own unique contribution to the world and will this all come together? Because, you know, I was going from working as a deckhand on yachts. I sailed across the Atlantic and part of the Pacific and did various, you know, things there, sailing, and worked in Peru where I was doing the journalism, and worked on film sets, as I said, and moved to Australia and worked there as well on some other films. And then, you know, I was doing bits and bobs and training as a hypnotherapist and training in neurolinguistic programming and art psychotherapy. And I was sort of going from place to place and then into the corporate world and marketing and events. And I was just going, where is, you know, is this all going to come together somehow? And I just really feel like I'm in a place now that I just absolutely love my work. I'm really passionate about the people that I support and help and sort of guide. And I just feel that all those different experiences are suddenly adding up to something of value and use. So it's sort of making sense, which is a bit of a relief.
Yeah, no, the reason I wanted to mention that, we weren't sort of just drifting off in a wild path down some avenue, but it's just to sort of show that people listening to this thinking, well, you know, they've got so many different life experiences, you know, and just it will all come together. Something will happen like it has for you where you think, wow, I can do that. I mean, you know, we're dealing with accountants and bookkeepers and people in business, but it's all those life skills. They're never wasted. All those experiences are never wasted.
Although I think you have to honour them. I would say there's one thing, you know, they're not wasted, but you do have to honour your own passions and interests and experiences. You know, at some point, you know, if you want those things to count, it's sort of starting to say, well, what can I do that I'm really passionate about and that matters to me and gives me purpose and meaning? Because if you don't find that fairly proactively, I don't think anyone else is going to give it to you.
No, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You have to come, yeah, find your own passion. Absolutely. Yeah. You definitely cannot be given it. So, a few last questions. And we're going to put a link for your book on the show notes as well. Let's say it's the last day now. It's the last day on earth. It's quite a morbid question, but I ask all the guests on this. The last day on earth. You're lying in bed. Everything you've created, your book, all the interviews you've done, your website, everything, all the people you've taught, it's gone. It's faded in the past now. There's one piece of advice you can leave the world. What would it be?
You know, it's two things. It's live your life with joy and express your truth.
I love that. Live your life with joy and express your truth. Yeah. Love that. Last question. There are two more. The final one is basically, where can people get hold of you? So you can tell us the website address. But what is something not many people know about you, Deborah?
Gosh, I tell people so much about myself. could it be that I... these questions that I'm unprepared for.
You were an amazing rower. You've just, I know, having spoken to you recently, you've just passed your motorboat license. Powerboat license, yeah.
Let me think. Sorry, it's taking me a little time. But I was going to say about oil painting.
Yes, you are a fantastic painter.
Well, I'm still learning, you know, and I still love to put myself into situations where I have to learn new things. I mean, a situation I put myself in a few months ago was to join a dinghy racing class, group class. I hadn't done very much. I just sort of taught myself to sail a dinghy. And I was suddenly in this group of a bunch of people, and they were all teenagers, and it was sort of a bunch of teenagers and me, and they were all really good. But I love that, you know, I love just putting myself into a new uncomfortable position, because I know that people I'm working with often find the, you know, leadership development process that we do quite challenging and maybe kind of confronting, but ultimately the rewards are just amazing when people come through and discover who they are as what I call a real leader. You know, who are you as a real leader?
It's also about building resilience, isn't it? I mean, there's you doing dinghy sailing with a load of teenagers. That would build resilience, wouldn't it, really?
quite humbling as well when you're getting 13-year-olds whopping your ass.
I bet. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, both of us do sort of silly extreme things, but it's, you know, I swim throughout the winter without a wetsuit on in the sea. And it's, people go, why do you do that? Because it does build resilience.
Yeah.
It's great for mental health. But it's, you know, I think if you push yourself outside of work, just think what you can do within work. You know, and again, working with your clients, you bring that energy in. So the people listening to this, you know, what you do outside work, when you go and do different things rather than, you know, we could all just enter the weekend and sit on the sofa and drink. Yeah, you know, anyone could do that, but do something you haven't normally done before. And you bring that energy, you bring the stories in, and those, there might be something that you've solved outside of work that you can bring that into the work. Well, actually, I worked out how to do such and such, tie a knot, whatever it is. And then you bring that kind of methodology into business. So enough of me gabbling on. Last question, how can people get hold of you, Deborah?
They can get hold of me on my website, which is deborahhenley.com, and they can email me. I think the best way is probably just find me on LinkedIn, the real Deborah Henley, and on any of the social media. I'm Deborah Henley on everything.
Excellent, brilliant. And your book as well, that's they can all find that on deborahhenley.com as well.
Or just go to Amazon. It's called Your Leadership Story.
Fantastic. Deborah, thank you so much for your time today. Brilliant. Really enjoyed it. And it's very authentic, very real. Perfect. That's how to be.
Good to be on brand.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, thank you so much again. And for everyone listening to this, watch out for the next podcast. We've got Jenny Ainsworth. It was Jenny Flintoff. She's now changed back to Jenny Ainsworth. She'll be coming on next. We'll talk about mindset and what we can do to achieve the winning mindset. So until then, enjoy the rest of the podcast and speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.